That song is called Here by the Water by Steve Bell. It's by the water at the St. John's Abbey Guesthouse that this first story takes place. The lake is small, clear, and beautiful. It's surrounded by a massive forest, and it has a short dock that is surrounded by fish that actually follow you around instead of dash away when you step on it. It was at this guesthouse that a yearly retreat would happen for the congregations participating in the Communities of Calling Initiative put on by the Collegeville Institute, which is an organization that promotes scholarship, leadership, creativity, and community among people of faith. That's from their website. Much, much more on them later. They're great. A little over 5 years ago, a gentleman named Dr. Charles Halton went to an event at St. Matthew's Episcopal Church in Louisville, Kentucky, where Bishop Andy Doyle was giving a presentation. While I didn't get the details on what he was presenting on, it had something to do with how to be a great church. Now, I have heard Bishop Doyle speak before, and he is inspiring. However, as you're about to hear, I'm not sure his presentation had the intended effect on Dr. Halton. Though 5 years later, we're glad it did. Here's the Reverend Kelly Kirby and the Reverend Benjamin Hart telling us how that first conversation went.
Charles said, you know, I just heard from Bishop Doyle that parishioners aren't supposed to ask you to do any additional work. And I'm sorry about what I'm about to say, but I've been invited to have St. Matthew's apply for this grant that I know about. And if I write it, will you just co-sign it with me?
And basically we said yes.
Yeah, sure. Charles, sounds like a good idea. He's now the Reverend Dr. Charles Halton.
Yeah, cool.
He discerned a call to the priesthood here, right here, on this floor.
Had the conversation here while we were at the first retreat here.
The grant that Charles was applying for was not a small one. 5 years, significant funding, regular meetings during the year, and a week-long trip to Collegeville, where they would do workshops and present on the previous year's progress. But it was also a place to come and have some space, space of time. The days were never packed with programming, leaving room to think, to pray, to sleep, to eat, and to talk with the other people there. And it's also a big space. The forest surrounding it is just under 3,000 acres, and it has walking paths sown throughout. The irony with this story is that this particular idea of calling, where we just think about people trying to figure out whether they should be a pastor or a priest or a monk or a nun or something like that, is exactly the idea that the Communities of Calling Initiative was trying to expand or to break free from. They wanted to redefine calling. They wanted to reclaim the idea of work and calling for every person of faith.
Hi, my name is Jesse Bazan, and I'm the Associate Director of the Collegeville Institute Seminars.
I'm Jane Patterson, and I am also Associate Director of Collegeville Institute Seminars.
Great. Thanks so much. And my name is Andrew Coleman, and I'm from St. Benedict's Table in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'll be your host for this documentary podcast series. It'll be at least 8 episodes, all of which will be telling the stories from this 5-year program called the Communities of Calling, directed by the Collegeville Institute in Collegeville, Minnesota. In this episode, we'll be meeting the folks who were at this year's retreat, which was the 5th and final one. They all reminded me of St. Andrew from the Gospels. They had found something, and they just wanted to share everything they could. But today, we'll just hear a nugget from each. But it's best to begin at the beginning, with our drive down, and with the two directors of the program, Jesse and Jane. Jamie Howison, Sarah Hodges Kliznick, and myself drove 8 hours down from St. Ben's in Winnipeg to the College of St. Benedict and St. John's University campus. The campus is home to both the Collegeville Institute and St. John's Abbey. You'll find Benedictine monks and university students regularly crossing paths. The monks will be teaching university classes to first years, managing the guest house, or making world-class pottery from a cache of over 300 years worth of local, world-class clay, or praying in the chapel that is made of cement and yet still seems to be warm and inviting. We pulled up to the Abbey guest house, and there was Jesse waiting for us. Jesse's the editor and co-author of the book Dear Joan Chichester, Conversations with Women in the Church, released in 2019. She was also a columnist for U.S. Catholic Magazine from 2014 to 2022, and she continues to be a contributing writer at the Liturgical Press and Liturgy Training Publications. You'll also find her running retreats all across the Midwest. Jessie works on the campus, which means she is steeped in this Benedictine rhythm and spirit of life. And it shows she was always the first to arrive at the events, there to greet and direct everyone towards the snacks, and to make sure you had everything you needed. And that Benedictine spirit was infused into every nook and cranny of the program. Here's Jessie.
These monastics, they both tend to the everyday, the daily life, the rhythms of that. And then they also have this long view, right? And I think that's been important as we've worked with congregations on calling, is that it's both, right? You're both called in the here and now, in the daily tasks, and also in the long term, looking ahead years and years down the road.
What we learned from being with those leaders around a really good topic. So I think that vocation just proved itself as a core practice that could sustain people through anything. I think that's why it's not up to us. We did our part,
yeah,
and everyone else did their part.
Yeah.
And so together we did this amazing thing.
And when she says get through anything, well, there was the pandemic. There were global movements and social uprisings that happened. And some of our congregations were right at the heart of those. Jane is an Episcopal priest in California. She did her PhD with a focus on vocation and is one of the co-authors of the book Calling All Years Good, Christian Vocation Throughout Life's Seasons. So she knows a lot about calling and vocation, about how it works and what it's about. To be guided by these two through this process was a real gift. I heard that from all of the congregations. But as you already heard Jane say, it takes individuals and communities together, listening, defining, and responding to the call of God, their surrounding communities, and each other for these amazing things to happen.
Great. I'm Liz Miller. I'm the pastor at Edgewood United Church in East Lansing, Michigan. Jesus was in there healing, and there was probably a disciple who was outside, like, explaining to the crowds what's happening, or like who Jesus is and why they're in town. And other people are like counseling people, or, you know, like they had different roles to play together in those moments. And when we read the Gospels, you get sort of like the funneled out narrative of like, here's what Jesus is up to. But I'm like, what about all the other people standing around or who he equipped and gave roles to and told, like, do this ministry with me and on my behalf?
You can imagine those disciples standing, looking out at the crowds, wondering, what's going on here? How can I help? Who can I help? What am I good at? What do I love to do? And how do all those things fit together? Thing is, it may not look the way you think. Here's Lynn talking about the wild and the wacky.
I'm Lynn Miller. I'm a parishioner at St. Matthew's. I've been there for 20 plus years. I also was on staff for a few years and worked with youth. Years ago, I was in HR, and I firmly believe that people's additional activities are the most interesting. So if you interview somebody, everybody's going to say the same thing as far as what jobs they've had. But if you get into hobbies or travel or whatever, that's really when you start learning about somebody. I tell a lot of kids that when they start interviewing for jobs, to steer the conversation to those off-the-wall kinds of things. People think of their job as a calling, or what they do, you know, sort of on the day-to-day as a calling. Yeah. But they never think about those sort of wild and wacky, like, outside interests they have,
yeah,
as a calling. And I think that's what this has achieved, which is amazing.
Jamie Howison, the recently retired incumbent priest at St. Ben's. In different ways, we are all called to be makers. And so while you may have the painter like Mako, or a sculptor or a weaver, you've also got somebody who makes bread. Or, I mean, I think of Barb at St. Ben's, who makes the most glorious shortbread cookies, particularly at Christmas. And she does it so brilliantly, and they're so delicious, and she just brings this abundance. I had the conversation with her and said, you know, that's actually part of your your call, your vocation is that.
Shortbread. Not exactly what I was expecting, but there it is. This is Edwin Weber, the priest from St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Spokane, Washington. We got to talking about some research that he was doing while on campus, and we completely forgot to do introductions. So here's Edwin on the everyday.
One of the conversations we had was with a dad. He's got two kids. I think they're like 6 and 9 or kind of around that age. And, you know, one of the things that he was talking about was like, you know, I feel so close to God on Sunday morning. Worship is so wonderful. We do Sunday school. We're all this connection. And then it's like by Sunday afternoon, that's all flown out the window because all I can think about is what to pack the kids for lunch tomorrow, you know. The everyday callings is kind of what we're trying to open people's eyes to, which is that, hey, you're living out your God-given vocation when you pack lunch for your kids for the next day. It may not feel that way, but maybe the invitation in this time is to open our eyes to see those things.
I'm Jackie Mueller. I am a layperson in the church, and I serve on the finance committee.
Jackie is at West Morris Church in West Indianapolis, Indiana.
I learned throughout this process that vocation can be momentary, like stopping to pray the other night in the airport when we saw someone down and being treated by EMTs. That was a momentary calling.
My name is Ellen Ferrone, and I'm a member at St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. I was a project manager and an engineering company, and there were a lot of moving pieces. Yeah. But you find when you're doing ministry work, there's a lot of moving pieces. Nobody wants to take the minutes. Nobody wants to put the spreadsheet together. When I retired, I thought I was done with that world. Joining the parish of St. Francis, I got involved in a lot of ministries that needed a lot of organizational skills. But now, mostly when I use them, there is an abundance of energy and even joy.
So we see that calling is always all around us, because God is always at work in the world, whether it's to do the spreadsheets or to pray for the sick in an airport, or equally as important, to rest and to take Sabbath. But for us to realize that those things are our callings, even the momentary ones, we need to open our hearts and minds to the fact that they are actually there. We need to know that when we look and listen, we will see and hear, cookies included. Here's a few folks talking about listening in various ways.
So I'm Stephen Zeller. I'm the pastor at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Cole Camp, Missouri. You know, people who are the residents I visit in the nursing home who really don't have much mobility and just can't do much. They're like, why am I still here? Why does God want me here? Yeah. And the day we realized that's a question of call. Like, what is my call here and now in this place? It's not to this job, to this role, to this, you know, it's who am I right here in this place? And what can I do? And who can I be?
I'm Carol Bishop, and I'm the parish director at Pax Christi.
Where do we see ourselves as a community? A doer can maybe answer that question, but it's not their favorite question or not their favorite thing to talk about. So it's trying to find people with the gifts of dreaming, big sky, what could be if we could just imagine it, that I think needs to be in the same room talking. Because it's frustrating for people who are doers. We're not doing anything. That was probably the biggest challenge for me this year, that push and pull of we're not doing anything, and yet saying we don't even know what we think are the greatest challenges for our parish right now. We haven't even identified that.
But of course, we're all going to hear things in different ways from different places. Some from individuals, mentors, parents, friends, others from programs and surveys, and some from whole communities demanding to be listened to. Let's start with Kendra and her trip to El Salvador.
Sure. I am Kendra Stia, and I am a member of Lake Park Lutheran Church in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. When we decided to partner in Yanuapoil, they asked me to lead the initiative, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to do this. Then I went, and it was a real transformative period of time in my life where, you know, and some people talk about having these moments where you actually feel the spirit within you moving. But that's when I knew that kind of work, mission work, right, was a calling for me. And so when we had this opportunity to talk about calling and vocation, like, it also just felt like an opportunity to continue to share with others the experiences I've had growing up through hearing a call from someone else saying, you know, sometimes you can't name it yourself, but others around you are like, no, really, this is what you should be doing. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that maybe they're right.
Here's Chris from St. Francis of Assisi. Where Kendra felt the Holy Spirit moving well on a trip, it was while Chris was working in sales that he figured out what he loved and how he might use that to bring wholeness into the world.
My name is Chris D'Amico, and I am joining Ellen as part of the cohort from the Catholic community of St. Francis of Assisi. Yeah, really relationship-oriented, as I realized I didn't truly enjoy that was the only portion of sales that I really enjoyed. I didn't really like the process of sales. I liked the relationships.
At West Morris Free Methodist Church, we already heard from Jackie, the leadership did a program called Mission, Vision, Values. And that just helped them figure out who they are in the place that they are. And here's Rachel.
I'm Rachel Mullman. I'm an associate pastor at West Morris Church. Unpacking all of what we did over those days and explaining the whole mission, vision, values and the scriptural basis for it and the ways that we can use it now and talking in groups and singing about the, you know, the songs and the art and the drama that goes with that. Like, that was probably one of my highlights of just like thinking about how to show and explain and illustrate like what we had done and make it meaningful to people.
Now we're about to hear a little bit from Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Minneapolis. This church is in the very heart of the neighborhood where George Floyd was murdered. Their story is well documented on their website, and I suggest that you go check it out. It's an amazing, ongoing story. Today we're paying attention to how they listened for their calling in that space and time.
I'm Ingrid, and this is Sandra. And we're from Holy Trinity in Minneapolis. We're located at the intersection of Lake Aha Avenue. We've got like 35 retired clergy. So we tend to get caught up in our heads historically. And so art is kind of a new thing. And the neighborhood kind of demanded it of us. Or like drew it out. No, I think they demanded it. Like they wouldn't have engaged with us on our usual terms. So we had to like figure out what their terms were in order for it to be like a collaborative project. So yeah, I appreciate that reflection.
One of the beautiful things about this initiative is that it was wide. It was very ecumenical. Catholics, Episcopalians, and Anglicans, Greek Orthodox, Lutherans, United Church, and Free Methodist. That meant there was a feeling of support for everyone from the whole church that came from the whole body of Christ. There was a real feeling of unity. But there were also significant differences. For all of those denominations, actually, even in congregations within the same denomination, calling didn't mean the same thing to each one. For the Lutherans, a call is a technical term for a pastor that is leading a congregation, so they really had to break down that interpretation first. But for the Free Methodists, well, they didn't actually have the language of call and vocation within their vernacular. Here's Kristen from West Morris talking about how that went.
Reverend Dr. Kristen Marble, go by Kristen. I'm the senior pastor at West Morris Church in Indianapolis. We are a Free Methodist church in urban Indianapolis. I think it was maybe the second time here at Collegeville, and we were really wrestling with vocation and calling, and what do we call this? Like this, if we say these words, they're not going to mean anything. And at one point, I mean, we really, probably for a half hour, 45 minutes, we're throwing around words and phrases and scripture and like, how do we talk about this? And then we went, it's discipleship. It's how we talk about discipleship. And it all of a sudden, it's like the skies parted and the sun came out and it was a way forward. And up until that point, we just struggled with figuring out how do we translate this to our people and not have it be weird or feel like we're imposing another tradition's ideas or words on us.
Yeah.
And so that like moment, I still remember it, that moment where we just said, oh, it's discipleship, was so huge.
I am Sarah Hodges-Kliznik. I am also a member of the St. Benedict's Table in the capacity of administration and communication coordinator. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think when I first came on board about halfway through, it took me a little while. I felt almost intimidated maybe about thinking about like, well, what is this thing that is calling and what does it mean for us? But as soon as I kind of got into that idea that, well, no, we know that we're artists. We know that we are interested in being creative as a community and celebrating that aspect of the community, it made a lot more sense. And it was an easy entry then to understand what it could mean for St. Ben.
But it wasn't like once everyone had it figured out, they didn't have to change and adapt. They kept having to listen, explore, and redefine. Here's a fun story from Maura at Pax Christi that highlights the joy of this exploring and redefining. This was leading up to their first event after everything had been closed down for so long, and it was a retreat like one they'd never had before.
I'm Maura Schnurbach. I'm the Director of Development Engagement from Pax Christi, which is located in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. We had a group from worship that said, well, how about if we make this really cool, like a manual to go with it, like a retreat booklet. So then, you know, they had presented something to the team and then they said, oh, wait, we want to do something totally different. And they said, do you need to approve this? I said, no, just go. We trust that you'll do a fabulous job. So they just, it was just really amazing. And people just kept coming up with great ideas. And we said, well, if we don't do food, what else could we do? So then we decided.
No food at a retreat? That's crazy. Like I said, a retreat that they'd never had before. But more on it later. It was pretty spectacular. Now, here's a program that was put on by St. Paul's Coal Camp, Missouri. It was for the young adults in their church. And I'm particularly fond of this one because it flips the idea of paying for a summer camp on its head.
So my name is Kim Noel-Zeller. I am an ELCA pastor as well, but on leave from call. So I help at St. Paul's, fill in when needed, but also fill in around the area in churches. But also I'm with my children, we have two kids, 8 and 5, and then I do some writing. We hosted a summer program for youth. It was throughout the summer when they had a little more free time. And because of the grant, we were able to give them some money. Mm-hmm. They had a stipend, so they were invested in it. We gathered together and had conversations like we do at Collegeville. And then the question kept being that I wanted to pose to them, like, well, who are you called to be? Not just what are you called to do? And to get them to think about their multiple vocations as a friend, too, as a student, as someone who loves to do this, this, and this, and how that can then serve others.
These next two stories are a response through art, and they both come from tragedy. First, we'll hear from Sandra, who is the other member up at Collegeville from Holy Trinity, Minneapolis. And then we'll hear from Chris from Boulder, Colorado. These ones are tough. When Jane said that the work of calling and vocation could get people through anything, she had these two communities in mind for sure.
We can all do arts and crafts. You know, we can handle that. We can take a strip of paper and we can write a few words and not completely break down. We can take a treasured object and bring it to church. We can think about that. If we were to think too hard, we wouldn't be able to function. So I think that the art piece, and you're right, it's another language. It allows us to express but not fall apart. Yeah. And then to see the weaving, go, yeah, remember when you did that.
So my name is Chris Broadaway-Bauman, and it's my blessing, my gift, my honor to serve as the senior minister of First Congregational United Church of Christ in Boulder, Colorado. People came around together to figure out what is it, how can we make a witness in this? And that's where the art project, the Soul Project, came to be. And that was another way of raising awareness. These boxes, each one representing a life that's been taken by gun violence. And then they get put together in a panel, 110 boxes in a panel representing the number of people who die from gun violence in a day in the United States.
The pandemic did a lot of things, and one of those was to expose the importance of mental health for each individual. Many of the congregations had mental health-oriented programs, but it was these next two that saw something particular in their parish that needed a response. Here's a little about how they went about it.
I'm John Daniels, Nativity of the Holy Virgin Orthodox Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, and becoming a Stephen leader and minister myself.
John is talking about Stephen Ministries. It's a program developed by Dr. Kenneth Hauck to teach lay people how to offer pastoral care in their church.
I said, thank God you did what you did, because now he's had so much impact by creating this program. So he created this program, and it's a systematic process. A Stephen minister is just someone who's trained to, again, be with individuals who are navigating difficult emotional terrain. So active listening, and enable creating an environment, a safe, judgment-free environment for people to be psychologically safe, to express their emotions.
I'm John Ritz. I'm a member of the church, Edgewood United Church, East Lansing, Michigan. Usually think of calling as sort of marching orders to go out into the world and take on some new challenge. I know in talking to individuals that there is a sense that part of our calling could also be that we need to support our own community and sort of do our congregational self-care in a way that's maybe a little more intentional than we have done it in the past, because we've been so focused on the outer community. And ultimately, I think the goal is to not see those things as opposed in any way. They serve each other. They reinforce each other. That becomes a way to keep the congregation growing and healthy and vibrant, so we can do this vital work in the community that I think we are called to do and that we can do in a particular kind of way. And to me, that can be seen as calling.
Now, a little more on that retreat from Pax Christi. You know, it really seemed to act as a microcosm for this program, because in these few words, she really describes what happens when we truly start listening, defining, and responding, truly start acting out our call that comes from God.
My name is Phyllis Olson, and I've been the chair of the Community Council for the last 2 years.
I think people were hungry for something like that, because, you know, there was kind of a great famine of being able to use your gifts, being able to express who you are, or whatever. So I think it fed a great hunger that had developed over the pandemic in the people. And it was sort of like sprinkling water on parched land. And they just...
Phyllis was talking about the folks at Pax Christi. But I think she speaks for all those who dug in over these last 5 years and engaged with their calling. Well, there you have it. 24 introductions. I hope there was something in there that you found interesting. There was so much, and there is so much more to come. Each one of those little nuggets is going to get unpacked over these next couple of months, and another gold mine for us to mine. Thank you so much to St. Benedict's Table, and to Jesse and Jane and the Collegeville Institute. This podcast has been made possible by the Communities of Calling Initiative grant. Join me here next Wednesday, and we're going to have a look at the power that story and community have as we try to figure out what's going on. How can we help? Who can we help? What am I good at? What do I love to do? And how all that fits together. See you next week. God bless.
This has been a sermon podcast from St. Benedict's Table. For information on our church and to access the full catalog of our podcasts going all the way back to 2006, visit us online at stbenedictstable.ca. In addition, if you are interested in supporting our online work, you can find information on the website using the donate button located on the top right-hand corner. Thanks for listening.